Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, PWTorch.com since 1999, MMATorch.com since 2005, and host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. And we are on the air 6 or 7 days a week, 6 days a week on a, quote, normal week, and 7 days a week when they're is a major Sunday night pay-per-view, although lately the normal week has been 7 days because WWE thinks we can't get enough of pay-per-views that we almost forget are even happening because they happen so often. But we've got a little bit of a break, and we got a chance to take a deep breath and assess what's going on in professional wrestling in the big picture today. This is the midweek flagship edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today and for supporting our show. We continue to grow in our average episode listenership. We've had tens of millions of downloads of this show since we started nearly 7 years ago. I can't believe that I'm saying that, but we'll be celebrating 7 years in at the end of December. And the growth has been great. We're a top 10 pro wrestling show on iTunes, despite so many options, so many big names who have done a nice job in the podcast market. Jim Ross, Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, and on and on. And we appreciate your continued support as we continue to cover current events. We are a current events-driven show. So current, in fact, sometimes we're analyzing SmackDown and Raw on this very show before the show even ends. As the final scene is fading, we go on the air every Monday night and Tuesday night, taking your calls and discussing the show. I hosted the post-Raw show solo on Monday, and I was joined by Greg Parks, PW Torch SmackDown correspondent and Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist Greg Parks, yesterday after SmackDown. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Pat McNeil, who only because of Bruce Mitchell is not the senior Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, but he is a 15-plus year veteran with the Torch. Pat, welcome back to the livecast.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to one day being a more than just another middle-aged Torch columnist. It's good to be here. How are you, people?
Good to have you. Pat, what I just retweeted the East Coast Cast's poll question, Twitter poll question of the day. They will be on, by the way, at 6:30 Eastern tonight at eastcoastcast.com. Travis, yeah. Bryant, the host of that program, they want to know what is the biggest story this week. And here are their four choices, Pat. I will ask you this question, and then we'll go from there. Brock Lesnar Goldberg. No Mercy's main event, the result of it. The proposed network tiers, or a women's Hell in a Cell match. Do you have a fifth option for the biggest story of the week? And if not, which of those four do you think trumps the others?
Well, obviously, the fifth option has to be James Ellsworth finally gets the opportunity he's been waiting for. He's been paying his dues in this business for umpteen years, and he's going to get his title shot against AJ Styles.
That would be
the fifth option.
Yes, that's another option. So what's your pick?
I would probably say Lesnar versus Goldberg.
Yeah,
and it's because you know the network tiers could be a big deal, but right now it's something that's only a discussion point.
Yep, I agree. Well, Lesnar Goldberg, because I did want to talk to you about this, and I wanted to talk about Goldberg himself and his value to WWE today and his legacy. That's one of the topics I want to go in depth on today. I do want to give out the phone number and let people know we are driven by current events, but we're also driven by callers. And we'd like some high-quality calls today. Give us a call, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Push 1 on your touch-tone phone, if you're interested in joining the program. Otherwise, you stay in the background in the standby queue. That's 515-605-9345. Pat, before I get your thoughts on Goldberg, let's just take a call right away. And so in case someone's on lunch break or on a commute and happen to be stopped somewhere, we don't lose their opportunity to talk to us. Let's start with 520. Area code 520, you're kicking off the caller portion of the show. State your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Andy from Tucson, Arizona, first-time caller.
Oh, first-time caller, we love it. Thanks for calling. How'd you hear about our show?
Many moons ago, I was listening to a review of the Stone Cold podcast, and of course, you plugged your stuff, and I've been listening ever since. I've tried to call during for the Raw post and the SmackDown, but I'm on the West Coast, so I'm barely starting when you guys are going on.
Yeah, makes sense, yep. All right, yeah, what have you got for us today?
Two things, and that's it. First, I might incur the wrath of the IWC with this question, but it's in regard to Sasha Banks. Does anybody else cringe when she cuts her promos? I don't feel she was very strong on the mic, and I kind of just, like, cringe. And the second question is about New Day and the Demolition record. Do you believe that New Day would have dropped the titles by now had it not been for Bill Eady being on the lawsuit, so they kind of want to scratch Demolition out of the record books because of that? And that's all I got.
Cool. Good topics, Andy. Well, first of all, on this show, I think if you listen regularly, you know that we are not the voice of the IWC. In fact, I think the IWC thinks this is awesome chants are a sign of a great match. They think that that chanting "You deserve it" is the coolest thing in the world to do at a wrestling show, and that certain companies and wrestlers can do no wrong. I mean, that's just not what we're about. So have no fear, callers, going against what you think is a conventional wisdom out there on the internet. In fact, a big part of, I think, what we do here at the Torch Pat is battle conventional wisdom. It doesn't mean we're contrarians by design, arbitrarily so, but... Yeah, no, we are not in lockstep with whatever the trendy thing is in terms of who's cool and what to do. I'm with you, Andy. I criticized Sasha Banks in my VIP my TV report this week, talking about how on Raw I just thought this whole thing about I can't believe I'm here. I was a little girl, and now I'm here, and I watched Eddie Guerrero, and I can't believe I'm here. And then going on Twitter and gushing with her rival on social media about how much she's so appreciative of the great match that they got out of each other and all of that, and then her doing all the crazy high spots that's almost getting her killed, shortening her career. I was glad to see Bayley this week speak out and say that when she watches the matches, she cringes, she fears for their safety, and she chews them out after matches. There's a lot about Sasha Banks that I think it represents a lot of things about I don't like to generalize. You don't hear me using the term IWC much, but since Andy brought it up, there's a lot of things about the, quote, IWC approach that Sasha entails that I think are really, really, if not, maybe just kind of annoying, but counterproductive also. I think that if there was ever a time for her, Pat, to talk about her history and oh my God, I can't believe I'm here, it'd be the week after she headlined Raw and the week after she won the title. I get that. I want to see her move away from it. I want to see her get into a mode of I've earned it and I belong, not this, oh, I'm just a fan who loved Eddie and I can't believe I'm here. It's just too much of that. And I don't want to see her, by the way, go into Hell in a Cell and try to get This Is Awesome chants. If she gets a This Is Awesome chant in that match, she's failing at her job. And so is Charlotte. The fans should be cheering for her to win and booing Charlotte, not thinking about how cool the moves are. That's not what draws in wrestling. It doesn't at a large level. So that's my take on the first topic. We'll get to Demolition after that. Pat, your thoughts on Sasha Banks and her promo approach?
Okay, well, the promo Monday night was clearly overscripted by somebody, and the time to give the I Can't Believe I'm Here promo is, you know, the week you debut on the main roster, pretty much. It's not, at this point, when she's been there over a year and she's already won the title, it doesn't do a whole lot for anybody. You know, the goal of being, of acting like a star, try to act like you've done this before.
Yes.
As for the IWC is an indie promotion out of Pittsburgh, last time I checked. And conventional wisdom, I know you battle conventional wisdom at times, Wade, and I appreciate that. But in my opinion, conventional wisdom is the stuff that comes out of my mouth when I speak on a show like this, and it gets picked up and repeated by other people. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent, Pat. As far as demolition goes, they found a way, actually, a few months ago to beat demolition's record already, which was to not acknowledge it. To pretend that those tag team titles are different and they're not part of the lineage of the company, despite WrestleMania history being part of their lineage. Despite all these, you know, it was just inconsistently applied. A lot of people were kind of upset about it. Like, you know, you understand it's a technicality and you're ignoring their history. Are they? I won't say that petty because I'm not sure that petty is the right word. But are they that driven by things like that that they would keep the titles on New Day, even if they thought booking-wise it would be better to switch them, just to spite Demolition, who are a Hall of Fame tag team, except for the fact that Bill Eadie's not in good standing with the company.
Except for the fact that they're not actually in the Hall of Fame. Yes, that's correct. The first question is, I'll divide it into two parts. The first part of the question is, are they that petty? I think we've established over the years that, yes, Vince McMahon and family are occasionally that petty. But like you pointed out, the correct approach is to just pretend Demolition's reign never happened, since we have a new set of tag belts and a new name for the tag belts. I think that they actually want to recognize that New Day has been champions for over 400 days, or whatever, and approaching the record, and that might be part of a storyline. Now you look at last night. I mean, you know, Miz mentions that he held the Intercontinental title for 187 days. Well, that was never part of the storyline. You never had JBL and Mauro Ranallo going, boy, Miz is approaching the all-time record for longest Intercontinental title reign held by the Honky Tonk Man. You know, they didn't do that. So it's sort of irregular, and I can see it going either way. I would have thought that New Day would have lost the tag titles by now, but they are not putting together strong competition for New Day, and I think that's part of the reason that they've held the titles for so long.
All right, very good. Let's go to our first commercial break of the program. And when we come back, more phone calls. It looks like 732 is on deck. You can be on deck too. 515-605-9345. Give us a call. 515-605-9345. We're going to try to get to calls quickly after you call. We're going to try to go for no long hold times here, because I know some of you on our midday episode, our midweek episode here, are on lunch break or have limited time. So give us a call while we're in the commercial break, and we'll try to get to your call quickly. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil, Torch columnist, and we're going to talk Goldberg's legacy and his value to WWE as one of the big topics on today's program, too. But first, some notes, some details on our main website that you are assigned the duty of visiting multiple times a day to keep up on wrestling news, exclusive features, get live TV coverage, and so much more. Here's details on our flagship website, pwtorch.com. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. And we are back. This is Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil. This is the PW Torch Livecast. Thanks so much for joining us today, either live at 1:14 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, October 12, 2016, or on demand in iTunes or on popular podcast apps. You name them, we are on them and available. You can also find our show at pwtorchlivecast.com. That's our homepage for this show. Not pwtorch.com, but pwtorchlivecast.com. Find out when the next show is airing and have access to prior shows, including our archives of past interviews. Tomorrow at 1 Eastern is Interview Thursday. Friday is Primetime Friday at 7 Eastern with Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant. Saturday morning, Pat McNeil, I believe you are guest hosting once again for Jim Valley, who, believe it or not, is traveling. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, sir. I will be doing that. Joining me will be Rob Kellum, a.k.a. the Maestro or the Stro, who was in WCW, Memphis Wrestling, and Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and has worked, I believe, for every single independent promotion in the Southeast. So that'll be interesting.
Very cool. And that is at 11:30 Eastern Saturday morning.
Yes.
And you'll be
so I'll be there.
Be there, and you know, hey, Monday Night Wars certainly counts as nostalgia. Saturday Morning Wrestling, a nostalgia-based program. We're actually going to take a day off from the PW Torch livecast on Sunday. It's amazing. There will be no show on Sunday. However, we will be doing VIP audio shows nonstop because that's what we do. We make sure that there is always something for you waiting in your podcast queue from PW Torch when you're a VIP member. We'll talk about that later. Let's go to our second phone call of the day. If you want to be in line on the phone banks, call us 515-605-9345. 732, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, I'm Scott, VIP member, Jamesburg, New Jersey. How are you tonight?
Doing great. Good to hear from you, Scott.
Hey, Scott.
What have you got for us?
I've got a couple things. Wade, really enjoyed your rant on VIP audio on Monday night on the hotline. Your rant against Raw, you seemed very agitated, and it was interesting to hear your point of view.
Thank you.
Guys, real quick, my first thing I got is, my first question I want to ask you guys is, with the way Survivor Series is shaping up, I know, Wade, last night on the hotline, you were not very happy with the way that it's set up. SmackDown versus Raw, big with the three Survivor Series matches.
I can't wait,
guys,
Scott. I can't wait to see a bunch of people who aren't feuding and have no personal issues fight in a match where I have no stake in who wins. That's going to be great. All right, go ahead.
I agree with you. Yeah. I can't agree anymore. I thought that you made a great point. Why not have 5-on-5 Survivor Series matches with the Raw brand doing a 5-on-5 and the SmackDown brand doing a 5-on-5?
Yeah.
You know, like doing their own special thing, and then someone comes out with some heat instead of just like you said, no one's rooting for the red brand or the blue brand. It's, you know, I don't see how it's going to happen. I don't see how it's going to work. But, Pat, I am intrigued. I guess they were listening to the Wayback Playback when you guys reviewing Survivor Series 87 with the tag team, 10-man tag team match. What do you guys think about that?
Pat.
Please, for the love of God, don't pin this on me. it's a spectacle when you have a 10-on-10 tag match, which is basically what this is going to be. But the spectacle doesn't always translate into a great match. Plus, when you do a tag team situation like that, and the falls come at the same pace as a single situation, it starts to look goofy pretty quick.
And I know that on ticket reseller websites that ringside tickets plummeted when Shane McMahon made that announcement, because if you're in the first 20 rows, you're not going to be able to see anything the whole show. So all you're going to get to see is the backs of a bunch of wrestlers standing waiting to get tagged in.
Well, but that'll be exciting to some people. But yeah, I can't verify Wade's statement, but yeah, I can't imagine that the way it's set up, that those three matches are going to be a draw. But they don't have to be, because Goldberg's fighting Lesnar, maybe.
Maybe, yes, we will see. Go ahead.
Guys, two things. The first thing is, speaking of that, can you make a prediction on what kind of pop Goldberg can have to the ratings on Monday? You think it could be substantial?
That's the $10,000 question, the $25,000 question, Pat. The influence of Goldberg on the ratings, that's one of the topics I want to get into as we get a little deeper into the show. Pat, give me your short answer on that. We'll delve more into the nuances once we get past a few of the phone calls and kind of hit that topic, because somebody was on hold and just dropped off because I think we didn't get to him right away. So I want to move swiftly through calls before we get to the in-depth Goldberg talk. Pat, do you have a prediction on how many tenths of a rating point difference, positive, negative, or otherwise, if there's such an otherwise on an either or like that,
well,
that Goldberg will make?
The short answer is it can't hurt. The long answer is I think they can get a 2.0 out of this Monday show. It depends on how well they capitalize on the portion of the show where Goldberg is coming out. If they save it for the last segment and they tease it and they milk it, they might be able to get it to, yeah, 2.0 is well within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and I mean, considering that the ratings that they're drawing typically are 1.93 or 1.92 the last 2 weeks. Predicting a 2.0 isn't even a tenth of a rating point difference. However, percentage-wise, percentage-wise these days, it's as significant as a 2 or 3 tenths of a rating point jump was during the Monday Night War period last time Goldberg was around. The world is a different place. The wrestling world a different place from a ratings and viewership standpoint compared to the last times that Goldberg was around. Scott, my prediction is they will jump above 2.0. They're going up against a Jets game. The Jets aren't good, but it is a New York market, so that can influence things a little bit. But it didn't seem to make a big difference this week. Monday Night Football ratings were 13 million 2 Mondays ago, 9 million this past Monday, and Raw's ratings were flat. So I'm not sure how much the Monday Night game changes things that much. I think with the announcement of Goldberg with 1 week notice, depending on the type of publicity that they do through social media and their website and that kind of thing, I would go as high as we can round up to a 2.1. The problem is it's a one segment feature, and to me a hot product makes a bigger difference in the ratings when people want to watch start to finish than one segment. I think the Goldberg segment will do great numbers on YouTube in the 48 hours after Raw goes off the air. That's my more solid prediction, because I think there's people who just don't want to wait around. I think WWE might have done it. They might have done themselves a favor, Pat, by promising that Goldberg would be on in the first hour of Raw, and then kind of, you know, plot it out for like 40 minutes into the first hour, but have people give people an incentive to tune in and let them know you're not going to have to watch for 3 hours, God forbid, to see Goldberg. He's going to be on in the first hour, but you could also run some sort of an angle or something that would be sort of a cliffhanger, and then have Goldberg actually come out a second time later in the show. But let people know right away, tune in at the beginning. You don't want to miss Goldberg.
Well, yeah, but that's not what they do. I mean, they would have had to have planned out next week's show before this week's show to make that announcement,
right,
and they never do that.
Yes. All right, Scott, appreciate the call. Always good to hear from you. Thanks for being a VIP member.
Thank you, Wade, for everything. Thanks to you, too, Pat. Appreciate it, guys. Have a great one.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Let's now go to 6143. This could be international. If you heard a tone, that's you. State your name and the city or country you're calling from. Speak up.
Hello,
yes.
Caller.
Yes, say your name. We'll repeat it. That means it's you.
Hi there. How are you going? It's Stan. I'm from, I'm in Melbourne, Australia.
All right, cool. I didn't catch
you. Stan.
Stan from Australia. What have you got for us?
Dan. Oh, Dan? Okay.
Oh, Dan. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, Dan.
Excellent.
Yeah, sorry. First time caller, and I'm a VIP member. I love the service, guys. Thank you. Okay, so I have just a couple of questions and a point. Well, can't wait to go to the NXT show in Melbourne, so let you guys know how that is. That'll be awesome.
Excellent.
And what do you think, my first question is, what do you think with WWE's booking with AJ Styles going from last from SmackDown recently, it looks really, the comical stuff just doesn't seem to give much credibility to his title run so far, even though he has wins over Cena and Ambrose. Just wondered what you thought of that.
I think that's a great topic, Dan. I thought, Pat, that AJ walked, probably did not come across as a main event heel, the way that he was acting even before James Ellsworth came out. I was trying to find the adjective to describe his demeanor, and I couldn't quite come up with the exact one. I wasn't able to spend time with my thesaurus during the show last night, but I was watching it like Dan, Pat, thinking, I don't know that, I think it's a little unbecoming of a guy who's a top credible heel champion to be acting that way. It sort of felt third or fourth from the top type, third or fourth at the top type of role.
I don't know what adjective you're looking for, but goofy, would that be it, or not quite?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good, well, that's the best word that of the options I was thinking of, that is better. Yeah, he was just acting too goofy. But in a way that was, I thought, sort of unbecoming. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a little kind of childish and like the butt of the joke. To me, it's like the role that he was playing is what the role that like Byron Saxton plays as the foil or something like that. It just, I don't know. It felt wrong. It felt out of step with when AJ is on fire on SmackDown otherwise.
Yeah, well, I guess they're tired of people cheering for him. So that's the way to solve that, maybe. I was just thinking back to the 1980s, and then when the NWA did that great angle with Ric Flair fighting George South in a squash match, and they made Dusty the special guest referee, and Dusty beat up Ric Flair and put George South on top of him. Oh wait, they never did that. There's probably a good reason why they never did that. It's gone beyond silly, and there's a reason why the crowd reactions, if you go back and do some of these shows that Jim Valley and I have done on the Wayback, the crowd reaction from 20, 25, 30 years ago were a little bit different from the crowds now. For one thing, nobody was chanting, "This is awesome."
And that's not just because the internet taught people wrestling wasn't real, because people knew back then wrestling wasn't real. The difference was when you walked into a building, you walked into a magic, and when you walked into an arena, you walked through some sort of force field where everything became real when you were in that building, because the wrestlers and the promoters and the presentation of the product on television and during that live event played into that. The way the wrestlers wrestled played into that. And it can happen. It's the same. One of the reasons people like to go to movie theaters, it's this isolation chamber where you enter this other universe and you get immersed in it, and you're not evaluating how good the acting is. If the acting's good, you're not thinking about the acting. If the special effects are good, you're not thinking about the special effects. In almost all cases, you're immersed in the characters and the story that they're telling. And that's what pro wrestling should aim for, not that this is awesome chance. You can do what they did with AJ last night, and people might not cheer him, but they're also not going to take him seriously. And that's one of the problems I have with Shane McMahon talking to AJ Styles like he's his Little League coach, going, "Do you understand? Do you understand me?" I mean, Shane McMahon is awful. Awful. He is, I mean, he and Stephanie both play that role, but at least Stephanie's a heel. He talks down to wrestlers, including his world champion heel, as if they're a 10-year-old who got distracted by a balloon and let a goal in. You don't talk to your wrestlers on the air that way. It's so frustrating watching it. And yeah, I didn't think last night was a good night for AJ Styles.
Yeah, compared to Shane McMahon, Stephanie is Helen Mirren. You know, this is, I mean, it's just not even close. And I missed the weeks that they've had Shane McMahon not be there.
Yes. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, thank you. Just going on from what you were saying there, Wade, about the Shane McMahon thing. At the end of that segment, he said, "I had to take business into my own hands." What do you think he meant by that? I think that could be something. I was thinking it might have been something to do with the club, but then how could they get them over to SmackDown and make it seem believable? What do you think?
Interesting. Pat, what do you think?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
He's saying at the end, AJ said, "I got to take things into my own hands." Does that maybe mean he's going to try to get the club moved over to SmackDown to give him some help?
That would probably be that might be a good idea. Yeah, I mean, it does give him somebody to play off of. It makes him more of a threat if he has guys there who can beat up his opponents. Plus they're not really doing anything with Gallows and Anderson on Raw, they've set up a feud for them with Enzo and Cass, but that's something that's kind of low on the list of priorities right now.
Dan, I appreciate your call.
Cool. Thank you very much for taking it. Have a good night.
Absolutely. You too. Appreciate you calling. Thanks for being a VIP member. Cool. Always cool to hear from Australia. This is a PW Torch Livecast. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil. We're rolling through phone calls. 443 is next. Please state your name and where you're calling from. What city, 443?
James from Baltimore, Maryland.
James from Baltimore.
Is this James Ellsworth?
No, not that.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
That would have been a cool cameo.
I do have two fists. I'm willing to fight.
Go ahead, James.
Question. NXT. Is Cedric Alexander on NXT or is he part of the Cruiserweight?
Yes.
He's both, as near as I can tell.
Yeah.
Because I was at the NXT Bel Air, Baltimore, whichever one you want to call it, and they put him over great. He had a match with Glorious Bobby Roode, of course. And it was awesome, and they gave him about a 5 minute standing ovation.
That's good.
Do you see a future for him?
Yes, I do. I mean, I don't know why he hasn't been on Raw the past couple of weeks, except that it probably doesn't play into a storyline, and they're protecting him. I think we will know more tomorrow night, which is the next NXT taping. And if we see Cedric on there, then we know he's going to stay with NXT. And if he stays with NXT, it's because they're setting up a match with him, probably at TakeOver against Cien Almas.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Anything else?
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy your day.
Cool. Hey, Pat, okay. what is the upside of Cedric Alexander? Because to me, he hovers in the category of someone who could be in the heavyweight division. They even said on Raw in his first cruiserweight match that he had to cut a lot of weight to make cruiserweight. Is Cedric somebody that they shouldn't be looking at as necessarily just a cruiserweight guy? Because he's kind of in between, I think, AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose in size. I don't think I think he probably, or right around, at least right around AJ Styles in size. I think he could probably, you know, work in the heavyweight division. And I'm not saying that it's a demotion to be in the cruiserweight division. I don't think it should be seen that way any more than Conor McGregor in UFC is seen as some sort of inferior fighter compared to Stipe Miocic. But what is Cedric's upside, and where would you place him in which division and why?
The reason he's in the cruiserweight division is because that, you know, he cut weight to make the 205 pounds. I think that's really the only reason at this point. And I mean, I can't understand the criteria that they use for making people cruiserweights and not cruiserweights. You have Neville, who is pretty much part of the superstars roster, and you would think that he would be a cruiserweight, but he's not. Cedric Alexander, he has energy. He is athletic. Those are the main things. Those are the main things about him. His work has gotten a lot better over the past few years. But I won't know what his upside is until I see them try to make a character out of him and give him a little more personality than, hey, I'm teaming with Rich Swann or something like that.
All right, very good. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour break. This is PW Torch Midweek Edition. Get in line on the phone banks. The number is 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We'll be back right after this. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back. This is PW Torch Livecast. You can find us at PWTorchLivecast.com. Follow us on Twitter right now. Take your phone out. Launch Twitter and enter PW Torch and click follow. All right, thank you. At PW Torch, you can follow our sister brand, at MMA Torch. You can follow me at The Wade Keller. And Pat McNeil is my guest, 15-plus year Torch columnist. How can people follow you on Twitter, Mr. Pat McNeil?
They can follow me at Real Pat McNeil, MCNEILL. It's the correct spelling of my last name. Or they can go to the PW Torch site and PW Torch Twitter feed and find one of the times where they link to me, and then just click on that and follow that way.
That works too. All right, let's go to the phone lines once again. Let's go to 773. State your name and where you're calling from.
Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris.
Hey, Boris made it. All right. What's up, Boris?
Thanks for getting to us early because, yes, I'm at work. My first question is the Brock and Goldberg. Do you think it should be two or three matches? Simply because if Brock beats Goldberg, that's 1-1, and that third match is the actual match that would determine who's the better of the two, right? And are you guys looking forward to a Miz, what's the Spirit Squad Survivor Series? Hope.
I was looking forward to a Miz Spirit Squad what?
Survivor Series.
I guess Miz teaming with the Spirit Squad in the Survivor Series match is his idea. I don't know what Nick Mitchell is doing that keeps him so busy that he couldn't make the Spirit Squad reunion. Still trying to figure that out.
Pat, is the destination of Dolph Ziggler and end up back in the Spirit Squad with Miz? Is that where this storyline is headed?
Don't think so.
Now, I think there should be a rematch. And Miz should lose. Miz should win, and then Dolph Ziggler will say, "Yes, once I put my career on the line, but now I'm willing to rejoin the Spirit Squad if I lose. I want another title shot." Although he would be entitled to a title shot anyway, but nevertheless, for the sake of my storyline here, he loses to Miz and ends up in the Spirit Squad outfit again, being humiliated. You know, it's crossed their mind to ruin Dolph that way. And then he can go on talking smack, Pat, and he can talk about how his character is portrayed terribly. He can go on talking smack and complain about how his character is portrayed terribly once again.
Well, I mean, really, there should be a line of people going on to talking smack to complain about how the character is being portrayed. But, I guess they could do that with him.
Actually, no wrestler should ever talk about how their character is portrayed because that's counterproductive.
No, they shouldn't.
Yes.
No, unless they're being ordered by their bosses to do so, which I guess is what's happening here.
But that's my point. No wrestler should be talking about their character on SmackDown, and it's implied whether they do it on their own or at orders of their boss. So, I mean, I think it's pretty apparent that when I say an announcer shouldn't say something, I'm not blaming the announcer. I'm blaming whoever was in charge of what the announcer said. But anyway.
Okay. Well, now that we've made that clear, and I think it's good. The original question is: Did they have Goldberg win and then set up a? They have Lesnar win and then set up a rubber match between the two. And I don't think they think of it that way. I think that they would much rather pretend that the match at WrestleMania 20 never happened, and they never show. I mean, they'll mention that it happened. I mean, Paul Heyman mentioned that it happened, but they really aren't going to show a lot of clips of it. If they do, they might show it with the sound muted or something. they're not going to be going out of their way to bring back the great story of WrestleMania 20 when the crowd booed both of them out of the building.
No, you're right. It's like they didn't talk a lot about Lesnar and Undertaker. It was just a dream match that was happening now, not something that had happened before. What's that?
It had happened multiple times, yes.
Yeah. This is a good time to transition. I do want to let people know, short wait times, if you want to give us a call, 515-605-9345. We're trying to get the calls right away today when we see the phone lines light up to encourage you, if you have limited time, to get on the phone bank. So 515-605-9345. Pat, Goldberg's value today, this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter that'll be put online later today, I wrote a cover story about this and looked at Goldberg as sort of the last card that WWE can play in terms of a wrestler from the Monday Night War era who can still wrestle, who they have not used up already in some form or fashion. I know that Goldberg came back and had the match with Lesnar. It's not like they've never utilized him, but we're talking a dozen years ago. So there's a chance now for Lesnar to come back at age 49 and next year 50 years old. By next year, he'll be 50 if he has a second match. Is there anybody else? I mean, are we finally done? I mean, they've done Rob Van Dam. They've done the NWO, the Outsiders. They've done Sting, of course. There's nobody left, right? We're finally through with this once the Goldberg card is played.
Yeah, from the Monday Night Wars era, sure, we're done. I mean, they're still going to be bringing people back at some point because they have a problem, you know, they have a problem making their own guys seem like stars.
Yeah.
Except with a few exceptions.
I wonder why that is. Stephanie McMahon. I wonder why that is. I wonder why today's stars aren't seen as men. Maybe because there's McMahon authority figures asking them, "Am I making myself clear?" And the wrestler just stands there and goes, "Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You made yourself clear, Mr. McMahon."
Right. Yeah. Because that's what Steve Austin did back in the 90s. He just stood there and said, "Yes, sir, Mr. McMahon, absolutely."
Yes.
That's how that worked.
Yeah.
So did The Rock, I remember. I remember The Rock saying, yes, ma'am, to Stephanie McMahon a lot.
Yeah, Ben Bruiser Brody, and just on and on. It's ridiculous. It is. I mean, it's born out of insecurity, but it somebody needs to step in and say no. Nobody talks to our top wrestlers like that. If a top heel, no matter what role he's playing on that show, gets asked by an authority figure, "Am I understood?" Not just "Am I understood?" but "Am I understood?" You slap him, or you attack him. I mean, it's just like, no, you don't. If you're a wrestler, you don't let a middle-aged executive, no matter what his last name, talk to you like that. And get to, you know, keep your balls. And he's got to turn them in. Every wrestler has. I mean, really, 2/3 of the roster have turned in their balls because of the way that Stephanie or Shane or somebody else has talked to them. And it's a problem, and it's why they have to go to Goldberg, because although they tried to emasculate Goldberg with the wig and all that stuff, too.
They did a decent job, back in the day. But see, people have forgotten about that.
Yes.
So they need somebody who's still seen as a star, and Bill Goldberg is still seen as the star.
Yep. I agree. Pat, how much value does Goldberg have? I mean, I know he's got the 2K17 buzz going. There are two types of fans, the ones who lived through the Monday Night War era. They were college age or high school age, and it brings back some cool feelings of hanging out with your buddies and watching the adrenaline rush that was the Monday Night War, flipping back and forth, picking sides, watching the NWO and DX and The Rock and Steve Austin tear it up and the Cruiserweights and the Rise of Jericho and Eddie Guerrero. And I mean, yeah, Goldberg was part of that. He contributed to it, but he was also a great beneficiary of those who kind of paved the parking lot that he squashed people in. But there is something about being gone for a while and being the last guy who still looks like he could wrestle and still looks badass and is of an age where he can still wrestle, kind of like Sting. There's some equity there. But how much equity is there? Do you think WWE is overestimating it by banking on this being a difference maker and spending a Brock Lesnar match on him? Or are they right to think that this can make a difference?
I think they're desperate, and I think it can make a difference, depending on how they set up and book Goldberg and Lesnar. It's very frustrating to see that, but they're not good at protecting their own wrestlers, and Lesnar has been protected to a certain degree. They hopefully will protect Goldberg, but they can't have him just come out once or twice and stand around and not do anything physical before they go to Lesnar and Goldberg, because he's going once you've seen him, there's a certain percent of the audience that just wants to see him and what he looks like, and then they'll tune back in for the pay-per-view. And once he's out there for repeated visits, unless he's doing something cool, he's going to lose whatever equity they have in him. And by the way, I'm all in favor of WWE just letting whoever runs the video game department book these shows in the future, because they seem to be able to come up with storylines.
It is kind of sad when some of the better booking is happening on the video game side of things. Pat, how watching Paul Heyman's promo, we didn't talk a lot about this on either of the live casts that I hosted this week. Paul Heyman cut a promo, invited Goldberg, or challenged Goldberg, said, "On behalf of my client, I challenge you to a match anytime, any place." What was your take on how Paul Heyman wanted us to view his client and Goldberg? Are we supposed to cheer Lesnar? Are we supposed to boo Lesnar? What strategy do you think WWE is taking in this regard? Or is it just a battle of icons? You've got to be there. Take your pick. We don't care if you cheer or boo. Just pay your money.
Well, it's that second one. That's what WWE is going for. I don't think it was a great idea to have Paul Heyman on behalf of Lesnar call out Goldberg. I think Paul Heyman should have come and did his promo and said, "Well, I heard what Bill Goldberg said about Brock Lesnar. Bill Goldberg hasn't wrestled for X number of years. It takes no guts to stand there in the ESPN studios and talk about Brock Lesnar. There's no way Goldberg is going to show up here and fight Brock Lesnar. So forget about it." And that's when you have Goldberg surprise everybody. You need to have Paul Heyman acting at least a little bit like he's threatened by the idea of Goldberg showing up.
Yeah, is it believable within the narrative structure of WWE that Bill Goldberg is a threat to Brock Lesnar? I mean, I know people are willing to suspend their disbelief, and I know people bought into Sting maybe being a threat in his mid-50s because he could wear the face paint and an outfit that covered most of his body, and it's just he still looked like Sting. Goldberg still looks like Goldberg. Do people care that since they last wrestled, Goldberg went on to become a UFC heavyweight freaking champion? He destroyed John Cena in their first SummerSlam match. He just knocked out and decimated Randy Orton. I mean, he ended Undertaker's streak. It doesn't matter that within the narrative structure, Goldberg should not by any measure have a chance against Lesnar. Does that? I mean, I'm not even advocating that it matters. I'm curious if it does, given how different they are today compared to 12 years ago.
Well, you got to remember, this is the WWE narrative structure, not a narrative structure based in reality. In the WWE narrative structure, Shane McMahon was a threat to the Undertaker. So, yeah, I mean, they can make Goldberg seem like a threat to Brock Lesnar. It would probably be a little more realistic and get people a little more interested if they pointed out, hey, you know, Brock Lesnar, yeah, what you said, Brock Lesnar went on to be a UFC champion. He's destroyed this guy. He destroyed that guy. He just destroyed Randy Orton, The Undertaker, you know, Dean Ambrose, go down the list. And Goldberg's been raising money to help animals.
Yes.
They should do that, but unless Paul Heyman says something on one of his promos, they're not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Our number 515-605-9345. Give us a call. Quick turnaround on taking your phone call on the midweek edition of the PW Torch livecast. Don't forget, you can show support for us when you're about to shop at Amazon by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon. If you type that in instead of amazon.com and you click on the link, it takes you to Amazon anyway. But everything you buy in that shopping trip, we get a commission for. You pay the same price, but instead of Amazon keeping all the profit, we get a little bit of it too. Throws a few quarters, a few dollars in our tip jar, and it's a way for you to say thanks for what we do here at the livecast. We appreciate those of you already doing it, and we invite everyone else who shops Amazon to think of us. So don't type AMAZ. Stop in your tracks and type pwtorch.com/Amazon the next time that you need to buy something through Amazon. Pat McNeil is my co-host on today's midweek edition of the PW Torch livecast. We're talking a lot about Goldberg. Pat, what is Goldberg's legacy in the Monday Night Wars? From a pure timeline standpoint, he did not show up when WCW was behind and help them become number one. He showed up when WCW was number one, but on the decline, and was around for the entire decline. I would say that he slowed the decline. He did not cause the decline. But the fact that a guy as green as him, with no wrestling history prior, so quickly rose to the top is a testament to his star power, his innate charisma that I compare to Road Warrior Hawk. Road Warrior Hawk kind of combined with Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it also was because there was a vacuum. There was a lack of top baby faces. You had Sting. You had Diamond Dallas Page. WCW, though, was booked. WCW Nitro was booked largely by Kevin Sullivan, who believed in heel heat, heel heat, heel heat. You also had heels undercutting baby faces. The NWO, especially Hall and Nash, thought that getting themselves over was important, and they were the cool heels who didn't necessarily get booed. They were positioned as heels, but they were very effective at embarrassing or cutting the legs out from under or emasculating their babyface opponents. Goldberg was a guy who came along and looked like he was actually worth cheering against everybody because he was a badass who had yet to be emasculated. It also helped he got to beat a bunch of guys with a couple cool moves and didn't have to do even Steven matches or wasn't victim of 50-50 booking. All of that helped, and he was a phenomenon for a while. But he wasn't Stone Cold in the sense that Steve Austin took WWF from number two to number one on his back. Goldberg took WCW from number one to out of business, and he was along for the ride. It wasn't his fault. But sometimes I don't know that people match that timeline up really well. Where do you put Goldberg in terms of, yeah, he helped slow down the decline of WCW, or he was a symptom of some of the problems they had, or otherwise? Your take on his Monday Night War legacy?
Yeah, he was a symptom of a lot of the problems they had, and maybe he could have slowed down the decline of WCW more if they'd known what to do with him. Instead, I mean, what should have happened at the start of 1998 is Bret Hart has just arrived from WCW. Bret Hart should they should have taken a year to set up Bret Hart, you know, fighting and eventually getting the title from Hogan or Nash or whichever NWO member they wanted to hold it. What happened was they went about 6 months, then they turned Bret Hart heel, then they turned him back babyface, and it was just a complete mess. I think it was because, you know, the people like Hogan and Hall and Nash figured, well, if Goldberg's the top babyface, he's you know, if we make him the top babyface, he'll owe us, and we can probably maneuver him a lot better because he's not as smart as Bret Hart. And that was the thinking behind that. And, you know, Goldberg's run really lasted for 14 months when he sort of came in as a heel. Then he kept moving the streak. Then he turned babyface because of the streak, and he kept going until he lost to Nash at Starrcade 98, and they finished it made no sense. And after that, he was never quite the same after he lost that one match. They tried to recreate the streak, and it didn't work.
No, you can't recreate that. I mean, that's part of my evaluation of Goldberg is he was so paper thin that in terms of his skill set, he wasn't good on the mic, he wasn't good in the ring except at doing one thing, and that one thing has an expiration date. You can argue, as Bruce Mitchell has, that they should have just had him squash he's going to be mad at me for portraying it this way, but just continue to squash everybody on the roster in 3 minutes or less for eternity. Because, well, it's working, so you just do that until it doesn't work anymore. I think that argument works if WCW was on the incline with him doing that. But at some point, Pat, I think Goldberg's limitations as a worker and on the microphone, and really his understanding of wrestling psychology and how to transition to that next stage, was going to be a problem and did turn into a problem in that even being poorly booked or losing a match was pretty much all it took for the house of cards that was Goldberg to crumble. And I worry that they're going to – I shouldn't say I'm worried, but I don't know what they're going to do with Goldberg and Lesnar, not only in terms of fan reaction, which I touched on. How are they going to steer the fans, or do they care? But how do they book a Goldberg-Lesnar match? I mean, it's going to have to be meticulously booked move for move because we're not talking – you know, Lesnar's dumbed his style down to Suplex City. It's not like he's having these competitive ring general matches that he's capable of, but chooses not to do anymore because he doesn't have to. And Goldberg, my God, I mean, he's always been limited, and now he's going on 50. Their options for booking this match are limited, and it's going to take some meticulous planning, right?
Well, yeah, but they had Goldberg in WWE for a year, and they didn't have him lose a one-on-one match in that year, which, by the way, is something that I would mention if I were, you know, trying to promote Goldberg as a plausible contender to Brock Lesnar. And really, I mean, they can do something that goes 5 minutes, and as long as there's enough violence and action, mostly violence, I think people will buy it.
What about the idea that Boris brought up of do they do more than one match? We had someone email before the show. James S. says, obviously the general consensus of opinion is that Goldberg will be returning on a one-match basis only. But if we were to assume that his run would extend beyond that point, where would you see him going after his presumed loss to Brock? And then he also has a question about Brock, which I'll get to in a minute. But Pat, is it safe to bet on a one-off match and Brock one way or the other wins and Goldberg gets his moment with his wife and kids watching, he gets a payday and WWE moves on and we never see Goldberg in the ring again? Or does Goldberg wrestle again? And if so, is it against Brock or someone else?
I would think that WWE would be selling Goldberg on, okay, we're going to do this thing, you're going to lose to Brock, then you'll come back for the next month's pay-per-view or something, and we'll give you a guy, you know, I'm trying to think of who a good guy will be for an opponent for him. We'll give you somebody, and and you'll get the victory on that pay-per-view, and you'll get to go out as a winner. I think that would be something to sell Goldberg on. The truth is, they care about Goldberg's legacy as much as they care about Sting's legacy, which is not one bit. So I don't think they're going to be interested in protecting Goldberg. They're not going to set up a Goldberg versus Lesnar match at WrestleMania because apparently the Lesnar spot at WrestleMania is slotted for Shane McMahon, even though that makes less than no sense. And really, if I were Vince McMahon, I wouldn't want to put Brock Lesnar in the ring with my son, even if he were wearing a suit of armor.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, speaking of Brock, this what you just said plays into James's next question. I would also be interested in hearing your thoughts on Brock's next direction, given the fact that, as you have discussed before, new fresh opponents for him are few and far between. Maybe a Goliath versus Goliath match against Braun Strowman. Personally, I shudder at the thought, but there's no arguing it would be a spectacle. Is that one of the reasons they're building up Braun Strowman, or gasp? Could they end up spending Braun Strowman's equity on a second Goldberg match? If Goldberg loses to Brock, I don't know that that's how Goldberg wants to go out. It depends on how it's booked. Maybe part of the negotiating is telling Goldberg, we're going to give you, you're going to lose to Brock, but we're going to have you win. And we've got this guy, Braun Strowman, we're building up, and we'll let you get a win against him. Or perhaps, you know, sprouting off from that, Goldberg gets to beat Miz or gets to beat Bo Dallas, at least, in a match where he just gets to kind of do his thing. Hit a spear, hit a jackknife, his music plays, he snorts, fans cheer, everybody's happy. So a couple questions in play there, Pat.
Okay, well, if they do that scenario, then they might as well do it on a Raw instead of a pay-per-view so they can get some ratings out of it. I think once, you know, a lot of this is based on Goldberg's mystique, based on him winning the whatever the fake number was, 100-some matches in a row. And once he comes back, once he loses to Lesnar, the mystique's gone. He's just a guy who lost to Brock Lesnar, there's just kind of like Sting became the guy who lost the Triple H in his comeback match. I'm trying to think of another example, but you get the idea. It's just not going to work. He's not going to have that. He's not going to have that drawing power. So you might as well burn it off on an episode of Raw or on a B show pay per view, rather than try to build up something for the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, because it's not going to work.
All right, let's move on to another question. This came from Reg A. Question for Wednesday's livecast. Do you think WWE should bring some form of male-on-female violence, bring it back, or at least tease it? I think this would be a good way to...
No.
Right. I think this would be a good way to get heat on both male and female heels. For instance, you could have a heel female wrestler enlisting a heel tag team to help physically intimidate her babyface rival. I remember an angle on Raw back in 2005 when Melina had Mercury and Nitro kidnap Trish. I also remember when Trish was about to set TNA on Lita until the Hardy Boys made the save. Angles of this kind is what I'm referring to. What do you think of this idea?
Okay, you're talking about two different things. Let's take an angle like the one that maybe people remember the most, where The Undertaker kidnapped Stephanie McMahon and was going to do some sort of black satanic wedding ceremony with her. That's one thing. It's ridiculous, of course, but, the threat of that as opposed to any actual physical violence, that's fine. Actual male and female violence. I mean, go back. You've got the network. Go back and watch 2003, 2004, and 2005. They did as much man on woman violence as I can remember, and it stopped being effective. And the reason it stopped being effective is they tried to do it for shock value. But when you do something for shock value 30 times a year, it's no longer shocking. In case you haven't been watching the news, the threats against women and threats of violence against women are frowned upon in this environment. You don't threaten to grab a woman by anything if you're a guy. Okay, bad idea.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we say that there's a narrative structure. Wrestling can tell its own story. There's certain things that the promotion will get blamed for if it happens. And to be honest, you're not going to have it in UFC. If it's not going to happen in UFC, you're not going to have a male fighter threatening Ronda Rousey, physically. It's just not going to happen, much less somebody who's not Ronda Rousey, one of the most badass women on the planet. It's not entertaining. I mean, I don't even know why somebody would want to see that, even in the context, if you framed it as, well, but it puts a woman in jeopardy and it gets heat on the heels. It's not something you can pay off. And it's something that, if you have fans imagining it paying off, it's a turnoff. And It's just, there's so many ways to draw money in wrestling, and that's one of them you just shouldn't have to go to if you know what you're doing. It's hack booking, and you should be good enough not to have to resort to that.
I mean, I'm, I'm sorry. In 2016, it's not going to put heat on the heels because, as we talked about, people know that, you know, people know it's a show. It's going to put heat on the company that's booking it. And they have been trying very hard to keep this thing PG and to keep their advertisers happy. I think one wrong move could set up some sort of a boycott and could put WWE back in trouble.
I agree. All right, another email question came in. By the way, our email address, I haven't plugged it on the show, but apparently you guys know it, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Lee B. says, good afternoon. I have a question. I watched No Mercy this past Sunday. I was surprised that the main event was the first match. No matter, the match was pretty good. However, I'm confused about the ending. Dean Ambrose and John Cena get AJ Styles in a submission hold, forcing him to tap out. Unless I'm seeing this wrong, he should have been out of the match and should have lost his title. But he stays around on the outside, then sneaks in later with a chair. Ultimately, he KOs John Cena with a chair and scores the pinfall. I'm confused, to say the least. If he has tapped out, shouldn't he have been escorted or at least told to leave and go to the back? Since he tapped out, how was he allowed to stay in the match that he clearly lost? Can anyone tell me what the rules are regarding this? The announcers basically ignored this issue as AJ boasted about his victory. I am not that smart, but I do want to understand what is a unrealistic outcome. This one stunk to me. I'm enjoying your shows, by the way. Have a great afternoon. Pat, take that.
Yeah, there is precedence for it. They've done this before. Two baby faces lock a submission on a heel wrestler at the same time, then it's treated as if nobody got the submission because they can't tell, I guess, who scored the submission. Now, it seemed to me while watching it live, I haven't gone back, that Dean Ambrose actually applied a submission hold first, so Ambrose should have won the match. But if you don't believe that, then you should do exactly what she's talking about. Say, okay, AJ, you're going to the back, you're eliminated, we'll let Ambrose and Cena fight for the title. They've done it before. It's a stupid rule. It's not a rule that you can explain logically. It serves to get heat, but it serves to get heat on the company for booking something stupid.
10-4, Pat. I am with you. I like there to be a set of rules, and I like it to be logical rules, and I like everybody to know what those rules are. And it just undercuts your investment in a match when it turns out that the wrestling moves don't matter because there's going to be some arcane rule that doesn't make any sense that completely changes the outcome. And I think you could, you know, the idea that, and I was glad that David Otunga last night on SmackDown actually criticized AJ Styles for winning the way that he did, or at least said, you know, hey, it's not a win he can be proud of. Nobody else resorted to using a chair. He only did because he felt it was his only way that he could win. I think babyface announcers need to say that. What we also need to do is have fewer matches where there are no rules because it's stupid. Because if a championship matters and you're a babyface fighting a heel and the heel uses a chair legally against you to win, you look like the buffoon for not using the chair first because it's a no rules match. So stop having no rules matches just because you want to tell a certain story at the end of the match because you're not a good booker. And so you say, well, if we make it no rules, then we can have somebody interfere at the end and that'll get us out of having to do a clean job. Well, yes, it does, but it undercuts the very foundation of what you're otherwise trying to do. It's my problem with having multiple Hell in a Cell matches. It's just they just think that the application of stipulations, no rules matches, gimmick matches, it's overdone and it's hack booking. And there's a way to actually tell stories without that. Pat, do you give a thumbs up or thumbs down to the three Hell in a Cell matches? Maybe there'll be six by next week.
Well, obviously you can never get too much of a good thing. That's why every year we have three World Series, three Super Bowls, you know, three Christmases, three 4th of July celebrations. I mean, come on, there should be one Hell in a Cell match and maybe on a special occasion two Hell in a Cell matches. And what are you gonna do? You're gonna have to have the Hell in a Cell matches all one after the other during the third hour, or you're gonna be bringing up the cell, down the cell, up the cell. You know, fans get excited the first time you lower the cell. They're gonna be less excited the third time.
Yeah, but Dusty Rhodes was criticized for it with Lockdown and TNA, and for good reason. So, yes, and as I ranted about Monday, stop talking about Hell in a Cell like it's a Lifetime Achievement Award trophy for the women. Oh, they've earned it. They've earned it. No, that's not how you promote a Hell in a Cell match, by acting like it's some great achievement in women's rights or women's lib or women's progress or women's revolution that they get. Yes, it is in a way, because it says Charlotte and Sasha have done a good enough job that fans and the promoters perceive them as worthy of being in that match. But you don't say it. You don't say it on TV. That's like in the middle of an action movie, having a bunch of the hero praise the heel, praise the villain for getting the role as the villain in such a high-profile, high-budget movie. Hey, you've really paid your dues. Aren't you glad that you got to play the Joker in this Batman? It's like, no, you don't say that in the middle of a movie. It's just the stupidity of what is going on the airwaves these days, Pat, with the way that they portray wrestling and the narrative structure in this social media, internet era. Is it's just counterproductive. I don't know how it makes it onto the air without somebody with some power going, hey, wait a second, this doesn't make sense to talk about this way.
Well, the wrestlers aren't the only ones who have their balls confiscated at the door.
Well said. Pat, thank you so much. Always great to have you on the Midweek Show. I always enjoy doing audio with you.
Well, it's great. It was great to be here. Thank you, Wade. Hopefully we'll get to do it again at some point.
I hope so, too. Saturday morning, 11:30 Eastern. You've got the maestro on with you, and I'm sure you guys will probably talk some more about Goldberg and take calls. If you are listening to us on delay, you weren't able to join us live Saturday mornings, 11:30 Eastern, you might be available, even though you're not during the week. So that is a great opportunity to call Pat McNeil and converse with him this Saturday morning on Saturday Morning Wrestling. We've got two shows between now and then, Interview Thursday tomorrow, and Primetime Friday with Bruce and Travis. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Pat McNeil. And go to pwtorch.com right now and catch up on the latest news and exclusive columns and points of views. You can also read my report on Raw with a ton of analysis of Monday's show and also my full report on No Mercy from Sunday, among many other things. It's a great-looking website. It is also mobile-friendly. Go check it out. If you're not a VIP member, we invite you to become one. And here are details on VIP membership, which, by the way, includes retro radio shows. If you want to go back in time and hear my commentary on past wrestling events or read it, you can go to pwtorch.com/govip for details. Here's some more information on going VIP, which we invite all of you to do. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Thank you, everybody, once again for joining me and Pat McNeil on the PW Torch livecast. If you want more, check out yesterday's show immediately following SmackDown. I hosted with Greg Parks, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, and I hosted a solo post-Raw edition with a lot of rants about Monday's edition of Raw. I thought there were a lot of things worth ranting about that were counterproductive to what WWE is trying to do and symptomatic of a problem at the core of their booking philosophy that was evident on Monday. Check that out also. And then Greg Parks and Pat McNeil hosted the Post No Mercy program on Sunday night. All kinds of shows you can check out. You can browse past episodes at pwtorchlivecast.com. Thanks, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch and follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off. Yeah.